This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we delve into those difficult moments with some well-known guests. I'm Giles Paley-Phillips, and with me in Chesham, of all places, is Jim Daly.
This place that I'm still at, because I'm not allowed to leave my house. Oh, I sort of am now, but I don't know what's happening. We're staying put.
And also, one time this podcast comes out, because obviously we record these top and tails often. We're doing it after we've recorded the episode, but the episode won't come out for a few weeks, so we don't know where we'll be at then.
No, we won't. But I suspect we're going to... This craziness, this pandemic and the lockdown and stuff, still going to be part of our lives, I think. Unfortunately, for quite a while, so I think we'll still be aware of it when this comes out. But who knows? You know, the future is difficult to predict at the moment, so who knows what's going to happen.
It is. It's very difficult to predict. I'm talking of predicting the future. Well, I've got a tweet here from Cavpool. It says, just caught up with Stephen Mangan episode. Fantastic stuff, and what a fine fellow he is. Well, very true. Stephen was an excellent guest.
He is a fine fellow indeed, and that was a great episode. So thanks, Cav, for that tweet. And
we'd like to hear some more tweets, wouldn't we?
We love receiving tweets. Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's about old episodes or future episodes you want to see, you know, guests you want to see on the podcast, or just general chit-chat.
That's a good call. Who you'd like to see on The Blank Podcast? We'd love to hear your recommendations.
Absolutely.
And we'll see if we can make it so.
Indeed.
Patrick Stewart, he'd be a good one.
Or maybe if they can tag them into a tweet as well, then...
Oh, that's always useful.
That'd be good.
Yeah, peer pressure.
that'll work.
Anyway, this week's episode is with the wonderful Ivana Lynch.
Indeed, yeah. Well, I mean, we've just recorded it, and it was a great episode. Such a warm and friendly character, just really nice, very easy to talk to. And we really go to some interesting places on this podcast.
Absolutely. And Ivana was lovely and very, very open with us about all different aspects of her life. Really interesting to hear some of her sort of the pursuits that she's into at the moment, including astrology, which, you know, is fascinating. I don't know a lot about astrology and I'm always open-minded, so it's really just interesting to hear all about the sort of things that she's been learning about that. And then circus skills she's been learning as well, which is amazing. I mean, she's just so open to new things, which I think is always good to meet people that are open-minded, and I think that's a great character trait.
She's really using lockdown well. She's really sort of making the most of the lockdown, which is the astrology things. I found it really fascinating, really interesting. Not a world I'm aware of, but and then it seeped into actually her life and her acting, and actually it's way more kind of intertwined in life than it's not just horoscopes, you know, in the newspaper. Actually, there's a lot more to it. So I learned a lot about that today.
Yeah, what I was going to say was that I think things like astrology often get sort of given a bit of a bad rap, because there's that sort of, like you say, it's the sort of horoscope type stuff. Well, actually, there's a lot more to it. And I think, you know, like most things, if you're willing to put in a bit more time and effort into sort of really sort of reading up and researching things, there are always more sides to things.
I think that's absolutely true. Yeah, you never really know you never really know a subject or anything until you actually pay attention to it and listen to it. And that's what Ivana's done. And it was, very interesting. I like learning new things. I'm not as good as that during the lockdown. I'm not using it my time as well, but it's interesting to hear from someone who is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think she's just a bit of a breath of fresh air, and I think that was great. It was really lovely to chat to her. So I think we should just dive straight
absolutely.
In.
This is Ivana Lynch on the Blank Podcast.
Have you been running the podcast for?
We started, what was it, the end of 2018-ish? Yeah, sort of September 2018, and we had John Ronson as our first guest, and then we've been going since then, really, and it's just been getting bigger and bigger and getting more and more exciting people on.
That's great.
Yeah. Nice. Because you do a podcast.
I do. I'm on a break now. There's such a lot of work. The weekly schedule. I think everyone starts podcasts, don't they? Because everyone's like, oh, you just have to sit here and chat. But it's not. It's so much more than that. We do a vegan podcast. But yeah, we take breaks in between because I just like to be able to read and think and not have to. I don't know. You have to be so conscious. Because on the one hand, you're like, numbers, numbers, trying to get up the numbers. But then I'll have panics where I'm like, I can't believe one person is listening to this for an hour. They're just listening to me talk. I need to make sure it's good. You know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, we're always really kind of, there's something that's the top of our minds, I guess, when we're always producing stuff. I mean, we put ours out every week, but like you, we try and have breaks now and again just to, give people a break.
Yeah, exactly. They need to catch up.
Yeah.
Well, you need to have breaks to do stuff in between, to have stories, to have experiences.
Oh, that's so true.
To talk about. But you're so right about, we can't believe that people listen to this. Like, a few months ago, when was it, Giles? End of last year, we were number one in Cuba or something, some random country. Nice. We were like, what? How? That makes no sense.
Gotta go do a live podcast there.
I think we should.
Oh, that'd be amazing. But it is not, again, it goes back to that grateful thing. It's incredible that even one person will listen and take their time out. To people's time is precious, and that they spend it with us is really it's lovely.
How have you been finding not working? I mean, I'm not saying you're not working, but not playing, not performing.
Oh my gosh. By the way, is this the interview?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Sure. Some people have a whole thing, but I like this better. I actually was so relieved. I just find the pace of life is way too fast. It's too much about what are you doing lately and what's next for you? And I find it's been so much better for my creativity because I have been for a while, I've been trying to write and I would do, because I have a few things going. I'll have auditions or I'll have my podcast or whatever else. And so I would keep sitting down and saying, right, I've got an hour, got to get this writing done. And it's completely the wrong way. Well, for me, it doesn't work to kind of strangle your creativity, to kind of try and force it out of you. I just didn't have enough space. So I would sit there paralyzed, being like, every word is wrong. And the whole isolation quarantine thing just being like every day you kind of have nothing. You kind of get to decide what you want to do. I'll sit down and be like, okay, well, I have probably maybe 8 hours if I want to, or I could, you know, and I'll maybe just get an hour or two done of actually working, of actually sitting there. Mm. But it just gives that space to be, to kind of be like, phew, you know, to exhale and to be free and do whatever. So it's been really great for that. And just also, it's, I feel like my life is a lot more playful. I don't know how to explain it, but like, I'm letting my mind go to places I wanted to go. Like, just taking up random hobbies. Like, I always have been vaguely interested in astrology for one reason, but it's just like, when you're trying to get things done and you're trying to produce stuff, you're like, why would I spend 2 hours learning about freaking astrology, you know? But it's just like, it's been so nice to let my mind go down all these paths and be like, whatever I'm curious about, I'm allowed to explore now. So yeah, I've really, really loved that. I mean, I miss, because I do a lot of theater, and I miss that. I miss the community, and I miss creative collaboration that way. But I know it'll be back, and this is such an unusual time that we have, so I am really kind of savoring it.
Yeah, it's good to have a positive angle on things, isn't it? I think it'd be very easy in this situation for everyone, creatives and otherwise, to get down with it and to feel like, you know, we're in an uncertain time and no one knows what's happening. But I think it's to be able to find the positivity from it and to turn that into creativity and turn that into learning new skills, as you're saying with astrology and stuff. I think that's, it's difficult, but I think that's the way to go. And I think in a way it's almost quite freeing.
Totally. And just like listening to you, what you want, rather than I have to get this done, I have this list. I like, even with my podcast, like, I love doing it, but it does get to a point where it's like, I have to do this because I said I would and because our deadlines, rather than what does your intuition telling you to do? Like, I think we can all become a little bit like robots, just productivity robots, and not having anything really, any goals, any big things to shoot for at the moment. I think it's really forcing us to go inside and to be like, okay, what really matters? What do I really want to say when everything shuts down, when everything is quiet? What is the thing that I, like, I'm burning to say, that I don't just have to sit, you know what I mean? So,
So the astrology.
I'm so new to it. Don't ask me. Okay, too I'm much, not good. Because I'm like, really.
Have you been reading books about it?
Yeah, so there's an astrologer I love. If you're into it, if you're curious about it, want to know more about it, she's the Hay House astrologer, Yasmin Boland. And I really liked her because she does, every morning, actually, she's probably doing it right now at 11 a.m. She does a Facebook Live and she'll talk about the planets and the energies of today. And it's just been for anyone who's feeling a bit like alone or a bit like, because I feel like people are either, what, they're either inclined to be anxious or they're either inclined to be depressed. Anxious because they're worrying about the future, or depressed because they're just like, what's the point of this? Every day is the same. And I would definitely be more I would lean towards getting depressed. And she's just made me feel like, yeah, she does this every day. She's so supportive and she makes you just feel like we're okay in the now, and there's, you know, there's a purpose to life, even though it's, we don't know what next weekend holds or when we'll see people. So she's been great. She has a course, and because she does astrology and moonology, so you know the way people talk about the moon cycles, like the new moon and the full moon, and they're like, oh, the moon is in this, and you know, people are talking about Venus retrograde, and I'd always be like, oh, it's Venus retrograde, so shit is going down, but not actually have a clue what that means. Yeah. And so it's really nice to study.
What does it
and
mean?
Be like, oh, it makes sense. So Venus retrograde is, Venus is like the planet of love. So Venus retrograde, where Venus is going backwards. So you might feel like a kind of hankering for the past, shall we say.
Okay.
You want to revisit old relationships or friendships. It's the time of year or time of month when ex tend to text you, and you'll need to be like on guard. You need to be like, okay, don't just lean into this because it's Venus retrograde. Is this good for me? Is this something I want to explore further? Or am I just being taken for a ride by Venus retrograde?
Okay.
I think that's what it means anyway.
That sounds good. Have you had that? Have you had exes? Have you had exes?
No. So I actually start to panic because I was like, none of my exes have texted me, and all the astrologers are talking about, oh, your loves, past loves. So I texted my therapist and I was like, I just feel so left out that none of my exes are texting. And she's like, no, this is good. This means you've been doing the real work and that you're not a victim to these whims. And she was like, it means that you ended your relationships in a healthy way and you've dealt with those emotions.
Yes.
So I was like, great. But I did. You do good. Feel left out when your life doesn't kind of mirror
yeah,
what
of course.
Else is going through. Yeah.
What star sign are you then?
Leo, and okay. Leo rising. And that's something I'm learning from it, that the rising sign is almost, it's more important actually than, yeah, the sun sign they call it.
Okay.
Because the rising sign is how you come across to the world, how you appear, whereas your star sign is like your inner self. It shows you like also where, because there's 12 houses. I don't know, do you know anything about astrology?
Not a lot. No, I'm really interested.
I'm learning so much now.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, this is just like basics, you know. I'm just new to this, so apologies if I'm messing up, but I do read the things over and over, so I don't think I'm telling false information. But anyway, yeah, there's 12 houses. So me being Leo rising means like my Cancer is in the 12th house, because you've got every sign, all 12 signs of the zodiac are in you in some way. So it like, or I can't remember what the house is, but like my love house is Aquarius, which means I love like an Aquarius. So like I like kind of weird people, unusual people, and I don't like clinginess, that kind of thing. And even like, say I did it on my mom, and my mom and I are really, really close, but she's a Virgo rising, and her Leo is in the 12th house, which is the house of like fears, kind of dark stuff that you kind of want to explore. And it made so much sense to my mom, because I'm always just like, why is she so anxious and shy? And like, she has a hard time showing up and expressing herself. She gets really nervous. Even if she accompanies me, if she was here like doing this interview with me, she would be like actually feeling sick, you know? And I get frustrated. I'm like, why can't you just, you know, you have so much interesting stuff to say. Why do you get freaked out? But it's because her Leo is in the 12th house. So it means that she has a fear of being seen and showing up, whereas, you know, Leos in first house are people who are like, we love being seen, we love being you'll find a lot of Leos in show business, basically. Yeah.
Okay. So. And it's funny you were saying about the sun thing, because
yeah,
is that related to the fact that Leos is kind of, it's a sort of summer, I was thinking like the birthdays for Leo, is it July, August-ish?
Oh, well, no, sun sign, everyone's sun sign.
Okay, I see. Okay.
So like Leo rising means, I think that's right. I think, wait, so like your star sign is whatever your, if I'm Leo, that's my star sign,
yeah.
But Leo rising, that's my sun sign.
Okay.
Your sun
okay,
sign
okay,
could
you know,
be
yeah,
Cancer
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah. So no.
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 It's me being sheepish.
So no, very yeah.
I'm a Libra.
Libra. Okay.
Yeah. Which I've always thought is the,
that's the
no,
water
no,
it's
that's
balance.
One about balance.
It's the scales. So yeah. I always think like the idea of being, I quite like that, because I do feel like I'm quite a balanced. Actually, I'm not a balanced individual at all. but I think they're generally, I think there's things like, I'm a bit of a people pleaser. I think that's quite a Librarian uh-huh. thing.
Right.
What about you, Jim? What star sign are you? Do you know?
I'm Gemini.
Oh God. Gemini.
Geminis are the worst.
No, yeah. Gemini. And so it's your time. It's the Gemini. We just had the Gemini new moon. Geminis are like...
Yeah, it's my birthday on Sunday.
Oh, cool. Very nice. Gemini, isn't that like chatty, like friendly? Gemini is also like the sign for friendships, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe I'm
in my head it's the twins,
yeah,
isn't
the twins.
It
so
in my head it's the sign of
two-faced.
Like multiple personality. yeah two-faced, how dare you. It's funny actually, I've never really paid much attention to that kind of thing, but as you're talking about it, it actually makes a lot of sense, and I think it can probably help you understand the way people act
completely.
And the way you act, and could probably in a way bring a bit of peace to that.
Exactly,
actually,
it makes you so much more
give
compassion.
You a few answers.
Yeah, like you're patient with people and yourself, and it helps you manage like the kind of shadow parts of your personality, the darker sides, you know, like because each side has really great qualities, and but they also, if certain things are not honored about you, certain values that are important to you, then you can just go just like that the other way. So yeah, it definitely helps you just have patience for yourself and others, and just manage. Like me and my friend do it a lot, and sometimes we read the horoscopes and it's like, oh, I'm not that. But it's like, if you're a conscious person and if you're working on this, like I know with Leos, I try to focus on the good in us, because there's a lot of like annoying qualities about Leos that they can get quite arrogant, or they can get quite egotistical. If you're not, like, say for me, I find that if I'm not doing my work, showing up, if I'm just watching other people in the spotlight and they're doing great things, I can get really jealous, and then I can get arrogant, and I can get like mean about them. Whereas if I'm actually doing, you know, a Leo standing in their truth is like expressing themselves, showing up, not playing small. If I'm doing that, then I'm more generous and I'm more loving, and that's like the good sides of Leo. So it really helps me just to have that understanding. It's like, oh, I'm not a mean, horrible shit person. I'm just a little bit out of balance, you know?
So it's a way for you to check yourself then.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. Oh, yeah. I would recommend going into it. But I also, like, there's so much to it. It's so complicated. And I had, the other day I was like reading about this, and then the astrologer who I follow, she was like, oh, by the way, there's several different systems to of astrology. So she's like, you could be a completely different house in a different astrology system. And then what else, who was telling me, there's just so many kind of ways of divination. Someone was telling me about the I Ching, which is like a Chinese symbolic language. I was getting so excited about learning astrology, and then somebody told me about all these other different strands, and then I was like, what, Jesus, what am I supposed to do? Like, I can't learn these all at once, and maybe this is all wrong, and it's just overwhelming. But I think, you know, because there's just endless information and knowledge, and if you read too much astrology, it all starts to contradict each other.
Yeah.
But for me, I was like, okay, this is the one that's resonating with me, it's making a lot of sense, so I'm just going to ignore the other ones.
Yeah, I think that's wise, actually, to go in, you know, if you're learning about something new, you got to take out of it what you want to get out of it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so get ready for this link, Giles. Speaking of the stars aligning, your journey into acting was something of a fairy tale in a way, wasn't it? It was very unheard of.
True,
it was crazy.
True. Yes. You want me to talk about it?
Tell us. Okay. Yeah. I ruined the link. I started so strong. No. I started so strong, and I just... No, oh, dear. Sorry.
I didn't... Where do I start? I was 14 when I got the role in Harry Potter. Mm. And I'd not done any professional acting, because I lived in the countryside in Ireland, and it just wasn't really a career option. But I was going to drama classes, because I was really, really shy as a child, and acting was kind of the only thing that helped me, that kind of freed me a bit. So I was like into it. And then I was also really obsessed with Harry Potter, of course. And I just, I was obsessed with the films. And then when I, the fifth book in 2003 was when Luna Lovegood came into the books, and I just absolutely fell in love with her character. And I just found out an interesting astrology fact. Interesting astrology link between Luna and myself. Okay, so Luna is an Aquarius, and that's the house for people who are like very quirky. An air sign, you know, air people are they're much more calm and spiritual. And when I first found out she was Aquarius, I was like, oh, I wanted to be like her. But I also know I'm very, very different to Luna. I have like, I have much more fire, much more determination, and I'm not as like accepting. So there's definitely, but I think when I found out that, I was like, bummer. But so Leo, the descendant of Leo. So imagine all the houses are a circle. So you'll be directly opposite one, and Aquarius is directly opposite. And that means that's the house of like relationships, love, partnership. So that means Leos and Aquariuses are compatible. Anyway, it just was very exciting to me because I was like, oh, that means like I have an understanding for her, but we're very different, and that's maybe why it worked, that partnership. Anyway, just I love, it's really interesting when fictional characters, when you, when their astrology has been, and J.K. Rowling thinks about everything.
Yeah, you know, of course. She's thought
about that too. So
when did how did you first discover Harry Potter though? Like, did you, was it through the films or was it the books?
The books. Yeah. So when I was 8, my mom, we're big readers in my family. My parents are both teachers. Pretty much all my family have gone on to be teachers. Like, my mom and dad would have said when we were growing up, don't be a teacher, don't ever be a teacher. Because, like, as much as they like their job, they never leave their job at home. You know, they're always worrying about...
My wife's a teacher.
It's such a huge responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, massive.
You're responsible for this person growing up and forming who they're going to be. It's crazy. So that's what they always said. But anyway, all my other siblings ended up being teachers. So it's a very bookish house. And... yeah, one day my mum, she was trying to get me off the Babysitter's Club books because I was really obsessed with them. And I was getting a bit, like, I was just being extremely girly. And I think I was at 8 years old pestering my mum for me to start a Babysitter's Club. You know, I was like, I can do this. I can mind 4-year-olds, you know. And anyway, so she came home from the library one day and she had a Harry Potter book because she said my aunt had told us about it. And I really didn't want to read it because I was like, I don't want to read about a boy. Yeah. I'm like, I want female protagonists. But she read a chapter to my brother and I was so enthralled and they went to sleep and then I stole that book and that was it. It was mine. and then from then I was just completely obsessed with the books. Absolutely loved them. Yeah. Became my whole thing. Yeah.
And I love the idea. I love the idea of that connection to the character as well on more than just a kind of normal level. That's really fascinating. And I guess that helped you to embody her character when, you know, you went to the castings and stuff, because you have to know so much about, when you go into a casting, you have to sort of take on so much about this person's character, but you kind of almost had a connection to already.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that. Like, you have to have a whole person formed in your mind. Like, you can't just be what's on the page, that limited to that. You have to have a life to them, and you have to have decisions on them that the director and the casting people won't know. And like, that's what I always loved about working with David Yates on Harry Potter, was he always credited me with knowing more about Luna and being more in tune with her, where some directors will be like, this is my character and I'm gonna sculpt you, you know, like,
yeah,
you know that joke on Friends, there's like this crazy director and I think he just goes, oh, my talking props, and I'm like, that's exactly how some directors treat you. Like, yeah, you're puppets for them, and that's not how it should be. You should know the role inside out. So I had that, but I also think I was a bit removed from her, and I think it'd be really hard to play yourself. Like, a lot of people, when I played that role, they were like, wow, she is you. And it's like, no, I think I really, like, I admire her so much, and that for me is the best place at which the kind of best characters to play, people who inspire me and who I aspire to be like, but I know I'm not. So, like, yeah, Luna was someone who, she really helped me through a lot of dark periods in my life, and I always felt like, I wish I could be more like that. I wish I could be more accepting of myself. I wish I could not stress out or be as anxious in that, and just having... But kind of in some ways being completely at odds to her, being the opposite of her, gave me more insight into her. I don't know if that makes sense, but I do think when you're playing someone who's too similar to you, it's really hard to have objectivity. And I don't know, I just don't think it will really work. Like, I actually got sent a script a few days ago for a video game, and it was like to play, it was a pretty weird concept for a game. It was like dating game, so the character was like going on a date with your character, and the character was like vegan activist into yoga, and I was like, I am not doing this. I am not playing myself here. Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. Well, guys, just going back to that, because you just sort of alluded to it, the fact that Harry Potter and Luna helped you. I know you had a difficult time, you know, when you were about 11, weren't you? I think when you had an eating disorder. How was it that they helped you during that time?
So I had an eating disorder when I was young. So yeah, like 11, 12, 13. And the thing with eating disorders, it's like addictions, you know, anything. It just consumes you, consumes your whole life, your whole personality. Like anyone with an eating disorder will know, you just never stop thinking about when you have time to exercise, what you're going to eat next, how you can eat less, how you can hide your food, all that stuff. You're just, it's constantly, and it's so exhausting and it's so dark. Mm. And the only thing in that time that would make me stop, get off that train of thought, that dark spiral, was Harry Potter. I would read that and I would just feel like I had a break, because it was like, it was, you know, the characters are so real, you really relate to what Harry's going through, just feeling like a fraud and feeling like, why is he chosen for this thing? But it's also totally removed from our worlds. Like, whereas I couldn't enjoy things like sitcoms or TV shows, because I would just see people who were, you know, even actresses, like, who were beautiful and thin, and you would worry, you would wonder, have they got an eating disorder? And you would feel like you have to compare yourself to them, whereas a book you can just disappear into. And I wasn't gonna, you know, start comparing myself to the wizards. It was really like escapist. And then Luna in particular really helped me, because she was so completely different to kind of the demons in my mind, or the dark things I was thinking. Like, I was just obsessed with perfection, and I was obsessed with trying to like find ways to be loved or to be accepted, whereas she didn't give a shit about that, you know. She was so, she was so free, and so like, she just wasn't thinking of herself. She had this beautiful curiosity about the world and everyone around her, and you only have that kind of curiosity or ability to delve deep into things when you have a full self-acceptance. Like, if you're stuck in yourself and worried about who you are and who you're coming across, you never actually fully listen, you never take somebody in. And so I just, like, when I would meet her, I would feel a huge sense of relief every time she was on the page. I would feel such relief, and I would also feel like, whoa, I want to be like that. I don't want to just be obsessed with being perfect, and I don't want to be obsessed with my weight. I want to like have wide interests and have a life the way she does. And she was just much more interesting. And I actually felt a sense of shame when I would read her, because I felt like I was wasting my life. And that was just, that in alone, in itself, was a wake-up call. It's like, wow, this is actually, the things that I'm devoting my whole time and energy to is not what I really want for myself.
That is so powerful. That's such a powerful reaction to a character. I think it's why people underestimate sometimes how much power books can have, and good writing can have on people, that it can actually be life-changing, and it can help someone change the way they look at the world and at themselves. And clearly that's what happened to you at what is a very impressionable age anyway. And I think, you know, the problems you were going through, a lot of people feel similar problems about the way the world sees them and how good they need to be throughout their life in total. But I just, it's so interesting to hear you say that about that connection to the character, because that just sounds like such a powerful sort of shift change at a really important part of your
life. Yeah, totally. And like, I've had that with several fictional characters, none as powerful as Luna, but they can completely lift you out of a dark place in a way that I don't think people can, because they're people. And like, you know, I definitely would have had that with, even with my therapist at the time, I got a bit obsessed with her, and you know, I'm like, she's the answer, she's the way out of it. But of course, she has her life, she has her family, it's a different relationship. So I don't really think the people around you, closest to you, can be that help or support system. And I suppose that's also why people get really obsessed with celebrities, you know. They can look at them objectively, or just, they can study them in a way that it would be, you can't study the friends or people or family in your life. And just having her as like almost an archetype, just to read her and to be like, this is how she lives her life, this is her mindset, this is how I can be, an archetype that I would then try and embody in the world. You know, I would, even like after I got the part, one of the beautiful qualities of Luna is she never feels, she accepts herself wherever she is, and she never questions whether she belongs here. And of course, like, after Harry Potter, I was suddenly in a whole bunch of new weird rooms where there's like successful and famous people, and I normally would feel very insignificant or question why I was there. But whenever I would tap into Luna, it'd be like, oh, Luna doesn't ever question that. She never has this egoic struggle of like, why am I here? Why do I deserve to be here? She just enjoys it. She enjoys life. She lets herself go into it. And she, curiosity, that's kind of her point of focus for everything. So I think, like, yeah, archetypes, and, you know, people work with this in, like, say, Jungian psychology. They talk about the different archetypes, and that's great. But I almost feel like characters in books and literature, or even in TV shows, whatever, they're a more detailed archetype, you know, like that. And for me, yeah, she was somebody who I would try and channel or try and tap into, so much so that I got to play her, you know. Like, it was, I went very far with it. But I think it's it's so true, like, when people, when they feel that relationship with fictional characters, you should use it in your personal life. Like, what is it about them that you love? What is it that you want to embody? What do you want to practice? And let them help you that way.
But isn't it inspiring, because those qualities were in you?
Yeah.
So you, there must have been a level of self-confidence in there, because you saw those qualities in her and thought, I can do that and be like that. So even though you were struggling, those qualities were in you, and you still recognized that they were there.
Totally. Yeah. But we have all those, we have everything in us, really. And I think it's just a matter of nurturing certain qualities. And I think I'd just been nurturing the wrong qualities. I'd been leaning into the darker sides of me and letting those take over. And Luna was just all light. And yeah, I think that's why I was so obsessed with her, because I was like, I am that. I have that. I just haven't given myself permission to be that, because I'm ashamed or I'm embarrassed or I'm afraid that the world won't accept me. So yeah, you're right. Like, seeing her out there being that way gave me permission to, like, nurture those qualities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you, I know this, you've talked about this before, but you famously sort of wrote to J.K. Rowling as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I wrote to her well before I got the role. Just to, like, to say thank you. She was such a loving, generous person. She talks about her struggles, being a single parent and being poor and everything. And I just was like, she understands what it's like to just be feeling really broken and to be at your, to always be in a dark place. So I wrote to her and I thanked her and I just explained to her what the books meant to me. And then she wrote back. It was obviously a time in her life where she was not quite as, inundated with requests. I actually don't think she answers fan mail individually anymore, because she's trying to save her time for creativity. But at the time, she got my letter, and whatever it was, it spoke to her. And I just think that's an amazing quality that she has, that she can care about. I was probably 8, 9, or 10 when I wrote to her. And, you know, most people who have that level of success and have so many demands, they wouldn't just think to say, I'm going to take an hour of my day and write to this 9-year-old who I don't know. But she has, and she really cares for children. You kind of see that in her work with Lumos. She tries so hard to help children. I wrote to her, she wrote back, and then we kind of struck up a pen friendship. And I was writing to her, and like half the letter would be just about nerding out over Harry Potter and this was when the books had not been fully written, you know, we were on after book five. And so I'd be like, this is what I think gonna happen, and this is the character, and this is the bit I hated and everything. So half of it was that, and then half of it was talking about like real heavy stuff. And that was when I was in and out of hospitals and clinics. So I wrote to her, and I, like, people have kind of trivialized the story or just simplified it. They say like, oh, J.K. Rowling told you to get better and you did for her. And it's so wrong. I hate when people share this false story, because it's not for, you know, it's not out of pride. I'm not trying to get the credit or anything. I'm just saying it's really irresponsible to say that you can recover from a mental illness for someone. You only do it for yourself. And because it will make other people feel like they're failing, because it did for my mom for so many years. She was like, you know, why can't I get you to recover? Yeah. What am I not doing? I'm a terrible parent. Like that, and that's something I've only really come to terms with in years since then, to be like, wow, what I put my parents through, to like how much they had to deal with their own insecurities through it.
Yeah.
So to say J.K. Rowling offered you a role in the film and you got better.
Yeah.
No way. First of all, she didn't do that. She didn't do that. I remember she did say, she wrote me a letter saying, oh, if you ever want to come to the set, I'm sure I could help, you know, I could make that happen. And that was very generous of her. And she was like, I could definitely talk to them about getting you a role as an extra. But I literally remember I wrote to her and I was like, I can't be an extra, Joe, because I really want to be Luna. And if they see me as an extra,
playing a, it's Luna, yeah,
if I'm there playing a random Slytherin on screen, continuity wise, it wouldn't work. So there was that, but she never offered me the role. And like, you know, there were so many times where I'd write to her being like, yeah, I'm making progress, I'm feeling much better, and I've gained a bit of weight. And then I'd have a complete breakdown, and I'd relapse, and then I'd go back into clinic. And then I'd have to write to her again and be like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm really, you know, I had that guilt that like, wow, I'm letting J.K. Rowling down. Even somebody who's been so kind and generous and giving, you know, in giving their support in writing to me, you know, this person who I idolize, who I absolutely love, she's done all that and I still can't recover. I won't even recover for her. Like, there was a lot of guilt around that. But it's also, I think people should understand that about mental illness. You can't like incentivize it. And if you're trying to do that and it's failing, you're not failing. Like, that's just what it is. It's this person's struggle. As much as you might be involved as a friend or as a family member, it's not on you to make them recover.
Absolutely. I think people don't have an understanding of the complexities of mental illness. And I think sometimes a lot of people, like those reporters or whatever, don't want to. It's almost like they don't want to actually try and understand what it's about. They just want a simple answer. And life is not full of simple answers. Life is full of complicated grey areas. Things are not easy. Things are not simple.
Yeah.
And trying to trivialize it and make it simple and black and white, I think only makes things more difficult for people. Life is complex. Like, it's things are not simple.
That's so true of like mental illness. You know, I love how people say mental illness, it's not just when you have an illness, it's a scale, you have it your whole life and you just have to manage it. But yeah, I mean, I've seen that with, I think the journalists and reporters, they always report that and make it sensational, because that, I don't know what, it's like appealing to the worst part of people, to the and it does get attention. And even like, I've had that, because I talk about this because I want to help people and I want to also for my own health. It's good to like, it's been really good to kind of speak about it openly and get a bit more distance from that side of my life. But whenever if I ever do an interview, like talking about something else, if I spend like 30 seconds talking about this, that will be the headline. And that makes me, that annoys me, because it's like, wow, you like, that's the most interesting thing about me, that I one time had an illness. Yeah. Like that's what, and then it makes me feel bad. You know, it's like, what about my other projects? Are they not worth considering? So I don't like it. I don't like that. And, you know, I think some people, they do cling on to their mental illness as like a sense of identity, or as a sense of, I've suffered, I'm interesting, you know. And it shouldn't be that. Like, it's just not the most interesting part about you.
If it's any consolation, the only two notes I've made are astrology Insta Live and Venus Retrograde. So those are that's my takeaway the interview today.
I'm really pleased. I hope you do pursue astrology if you're interested.
Yeah, I might do, but I'm also thinking that Venus Retrograde is an amazing name for a band.
Oh!
It is a good band name.
Has to be taken.
Moving forward a little bit, once you went and auditioned, and there was gazillions of other people that auditioned, but obviously you got the part. What was it like that first day on set?
Oh my God, it was terrifying. It was so overwhelming. The first day on set we did, it was a big group scene. It was in the room of requirement, so there was loads of other people. So it wasn't like you know, I think all I had to do was be like Redotto or something, or Revelio. I can't remember the charm exactly, but it wasn't like I had to have a big scene with Daniel Radcliffe or anything. That came a bit later on. So I had a bit, like, I got more relaxed into the atmosphere and just how filming worked. Mm. But I was so... I just couldn't stop thinking, like, this is a Harry Potter film. This is a Harry Potter film. Whereas I think everyone else was like, this is work and we're playing and we're experimenting, which is exactly what it should be. It should be about playing experimentation. Whereas I kept, like, going up to David Yates and I'd be like... Is that the take you're going to use? Like, you know, I was just like, is that the take that's going to be on screen, seen by millions of people and will be immortalized forever? You know, I just couldn't. So that I was really, my perfectionism kicked in. I was like, I got to do everything right. And I couldn't understand how everyone, all the other kids around me were like laughing and having fun. And they were not even talking about Harry Potter. They were talking about like their love lives and like just whatever other drama was going on. I was just like, why is nobody taking this seriously? But I mean, I learned over the course of filming that perfectionism is so paralyzing. You never want to turn up on set and be like, I gotta nail this take. It has to be about play and experimentation and like you kind of ease into it or it's all about discovery, really, not trying to nail a take. I think that's a stupid myth. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's... Oh, sorry, Giles. I think that's a good... lesson for life. A lot of people try to be perfect in everything they do, and you're absolutely right that we said before in the interview, Giles, on this podcast, that the journey is almost more important and more fun than the end result and the perfection. And I guess you have to have a level of trust, like trust in yourself that you're going to turn up and do a decent take, trust in the director that they're going to, you know, to give you the right notes, trust in the editor that they're going to pick the right scene. You know, it's all about...
It's a collaboration, those sort of things.
Not on yourself too much, it's collaboration.
That's so true. Exactly. Like, it's very arrogant to think that, like, it's only on you. You have to be the one controlling this and getting this right. You're right, like, and I had to do that with the director, to be like, oh, he knows, he's got it too. Like, I'm not the only one who's worried about the quality here. Like, that's everyone else's job
There's
too.
There's quite a lot of money on this.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're, like, those performances, that's the thing, the difference with, like, big budget movies and small scale things, like, on those big budget movies, there's so many people involved in your performance. Like, the costume is a big part of it, the look, and like, people spend hours working on that. And even like, there's a scene in, I think it's in the sixth movie where Dumbledore dies, and there's this scene where we all put up our wands and everyone's crying and it's moving. We didn't cry. Like, those tears were added by CGI, you know? So it's like, and that's quite unusual. Wow. I think it was a decision they made afterwards. Like, it's not like David Yates was trying to get us to cry and we couldn't. It was just something afterwards. And they were like, you know what? It's going to be less expensive and take less time. Just do it CGI. Yeah. Rather than doing a reshoot and trying to get everyone to weep in tandem. Those things, it's not really a raw performance. There are definitely moments, of course, where things will be raw, but I certainly found, like, while doing it, the onus is not all on you. There's so many eyes on you, and there's people, and you have to fight to kind of get your word across. And luckily, David Yates, as I said earlier, he was so open to that, and he was so open to collaborative... Just collaboration. But other directors, like, that was such a skill on a set like that, a set of that scale. Other directors would definitely turn into, you know, dictators and want to control everything.
About life on set in general? Obviously, you would have had to have done school stuff while you were there.
Yeah.
What was, like, adjusting to life on set generally, you know, your day-to-day kind of, you know, having to do things like school or, you know, just... I don't know, just living through that every day-to-day kind of stuff that you're having to do, but on a set.
Yeah. We legally had to have a minimum of 3 hours of tutoring a day, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it actually was way more intense than normal school. Normal school, you can doze off. There's 20 other people, 30 other people to take the teacher's attention, but... like, the teachers are like breathing in your face and making sure that you're concentrating. So that was a lot. And it was just also really hard to concentrate because, like we had this tutoring corridor and you'd be there doing your maths, and then like somebody would walk by with like a magnificent beard and a fabulous hat, like wizards would just be walking by the window, and I'd be like, well, I just want to get out there and join them. And some of the cast were basically, as soon as you hit 16, I think Rupert did, when he hit 16, he was like, nope, done with school, no thank you. Whereas Emma was different. She was like soldiering on. She was determined to do her A-levels, and obviously she went to Brown and Oxford. But I was definitely more sympathetic towards Rupert. I was like, I want to just quit as soon as I can. And I couldn't, because, as I said, I have teacher parents. That wasn't an option for me, but it was definitely hard to focus. But like they made it as normal as they could. Like they got me an Irish teacher in London, and like I did things like in Ireland we have a year called transition year between like your GCSEs and A levels, though we don't call it that. But between those exams, you have a year where you're supposed to like get work experience. So and you're supposed to like put on shows and things. So I got work experience. I got to do work experience in the makeup department, in the costume department, in the art department. So like that was amazing.
Cool. Yeah,
like, other
cool.
people are there working in, you know, the local shop. I was like, great. It was really cool. But they made me do extremely boring jobs. They made me like sew on the names of the extras onto their Hogwarts robes. Yeah, I wasn't doing any design stuff or anything. Yeah, but it was like... It definitely got into a routine, into a rhythm. 3 hours tutoring a day, and it was its own little thing. Like if you've ever been there, Leaves and Studios is like a village of its own. It's totally separate from the world, and we were teenagers and nobody had social media, so we weren't, the whole filming part felt completely removed from the actual publicity and being out there. Like it didn't feel like we were famous or that we were actors really. It was just like we were going to work and we were having fun and doing school, and it felt really, really normal. I think it would be very different to do those films now.
I was gonna say, with social media, that would be a massive distraction for you guys, wouldn't it, if you were sort of Instagramming and stuff.
Like people, we didn't even have no behind the scenes photos, for example, because we didn't really, we maybe just about had those small flip up picture phones, but iPhones were not like the thing really. So and I'm glad we didn't have that. I'm glad we were able to focus, but I don't know, it would be very different. It would be very hard for them to like keep it secret.
That's the thing, isn't it?
I think it sounds like it's a real skill as well, of all the people you were working with. I listened to Daniel Radcliffe's Desert Island Discs on Radio 4, and it's really good, and he comes across really, sounds like such a nice guy. But he was saying about being on set, and it's a couple of years before you joined, but they used to treat the actors like kids first, actors second. Definitely. And he said that was a really good way of making them sort of grow up naturally throughout the process, I think. And I think that's, I'd never really thought before about movie sets where you've got kids involved. You of course you have to do everything differently. You have to, you know, make sure you're protecting these young people and at the same time getting performances out of them. And it sounds like they got the balance on that set absolutely right for you guys to flourish.
Totally. And the producers were brilliant in like they just never, they did that. They really treated us as young people, and that our I suppose our school life was just as important as the films, even though it wasn't, you know, to them it was. But like they respected that, and they never, there's a certain amount of hours you can film. I remember so many times we'd be in the midst of a scene, and David Yates is one of those directors who's notorious for going, one more guys, one more, and he'll do 10 more. It's never just one more. But he would be doing that, and we'd be almost there, and then I think it was Cliff was like the first on the first one I did, the first assistant director, and he'd be like, oh, that's it, we gotta call it, like the day would end, and I would go up to him and be like, I won't tell the lawyers, I promise, like I think we should just get this scene. But they were like, no, sorry, we've got timesheets. It was really, really strict about that. So and there was also nobody talking about like your career beyond this, trying to, you know, now everyone's like about building your brand and building your image. Like that was so alien to me when that all started. And I see young actors who have these like shit hot, like, social media and websites and everything. They've got all their headshots, and we were not that at all. We were not kind of trained for the media that way, and I'm glad because it kept us normal. But sometimes I do feel like, whoa, I wonder if I'd be further ahead if I was that savvy to publicity the way young actors these days are.
I was just going to say, it doesn't sound like something that we talked right at the start of this interview about knowing yourself and discovering yourself. It doesn't sound like that's something that would have been you anyway.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have. I'd have been really lost. Mm. And I did find that way more overwhelming than the actual acting. Like, I never really gave a second thought. The acting, I was just like, great, just show up and play, have fun, and just basically play out all the scenarios of Harry Potter that I've been playing in my head for years. That was easy. It was just the whole, oh, suddenly you're a celebrity, or suddenly you're an actor. Like, even when people started introducing me as an actor, I was like, no, I've done a few scenes in a movie. I'm not an actor, you know? So that was a difficult adjustment. And yeah, because also part of being a fan is you're obsessed with, I was obsessed with the actors and the films who I was working with. So suddenly for it to be switched and to have people interviewing me as if I had something interesting to say, I was just like, I just don't know what to say. I mostly just banged on about Harry Potter, yeah. Which I loved it. But yeah, that was the only.
Yeah, I was going to say, post Harry Potter, is that been a difficult adjustment then? Like you're saying, like, you know, people are expecting something of you to a certain extent. Is it tricky? Is it challenging?
Yeah, like the years after Potter were the hardest, I think. Just the pressure I put on myself to be. Because, like, Harry Potter was so huge. It's the biggest thing. It's still the thing people, my name is kind of synonymous with, and that's what they think of. They don't, and it's not, I don't consider that the peak of my career, you know? Like, no. I was 14, and I look at that, and it's like, it's kind of only a few minutes in my life, and I didn't really know myself when I was 14. So I don't, I think other people from the outside will see it as that, but to me, it's like, no, a lot of the work I've done since, I mean, look, the writing on Harry Potter is just amazing, out of this world. And I've had other scripts since where I'm like, why can't it be J.K. Rowling writing this? Because they don't write the characters with as much depth or detail. But I just feel like I've done, like, plays, I've done smaller movies where I feel I've got more, I put more of myself into it, or I feel like I've got, it's more challenging or more fulfilling or something like that. So... So it was, I think it was difficult for the first few years because I was just like, I have to top Harry Potter. And that was a ridiculous task to give myself. And I also didn't really have much acting experience. So the industry was really difficult to navigate. And because I had people telling me, well, you can't do smaller things. You've got to keep going up. But then it was like this conundrum, because it's like, well, how do I gain the experience I need if I'm always trying to find something that will match Harry Potter? So I, like, after a few years, I kind of went, well, fuck that, I want to actually experience and live life, and I don't really care if it's commercially successful now. If it speaks to me, that's what matters. Yeah,
that's quite freeing, I think, isn't it, actually? That must have felt a bit of sort of like a weight off your shoulders, just to be able to crack on and be you. And again, like we said earlier in the interview, doing things you want to do. You know, we talked about in the lockdown, doing what you want to do, doing what speaks to you. And I think that's important, rather than trying to match up to something that's this, you know, this big thing that's difficult to match up to.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I don't know what else to say about that. But I mean, people are a bit obsessed with commercial success or things that are big, and you know, that's like, Harry Potter is one of those unique things where it has so much heart to it, so I get why it's big, and I love that it's huge. But I just don't think that means success, that always means that's what you should be aiming for. I just more see it like, oh, you should aim for something that feels authentic to you, and that feels like, ooh, this is going to be an interesting challenge. And, you know, sometimes for me, that maybe it is a big movie. Like, I've had that where I've, like, really, really hustled to try and get parts in bigger things when I know the competition is fierce. But other times it's like, you know, I did a play a few years ago, Disco Pigs, and it was like, well, it was in Trafalgar Studios, so it wasn't like, but it was a small theater. It was like 200 seats, and that to me was that, like, that role was so exciting and so weird and different. So, and I was kind of like, I'm enjoying this just as much as I would being on any big set. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's, I mean, I think that's incredibly courageous to actually sort of say, okay, I'm going to do stuff that I really want to do. Because it would be, in some respects, although you were saying, it's, you know, you're putting yourself up for bigger things, I think in some respects, after the success, and you could ride off that success and want to do sort of bigger things. I think it's really, I think it's a really brave and courageous thing to suddenly say, okay, look, I'm going to do stuff that interests me. I'm going to do stuff that gets my yeah. fire going, you know. I mean, all power to you for that, I think, because I think that's... I think as artists and creatives, I think that's what keeps us doing it.
Yeah. I just don't know, like, this idea that we all have to reach the top. I just think some of us are more obscure, you know? It doesn't... And that's valuable too. Like, it doesn't... I just really hate this pressure that, oh, what have you done since? Or... I suppose the attitude people have towards, they gain respect for you when you do a certain scale of project. And I mean, for another of my weird side hobbies is circus, which I really
is
love.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I do like aerial and acro balance.
Wow.
And it's really fun. But like, even in that community, there's just so many amazing artists who are completely anonymous, and that like, they work so hard, they're so skilled, they spend hours doing these really quite strange hobbies, and that's what I admire. I admire that craft, that commitment to exploring themselves and challenging themselves. And yeah, sometimes I think the stuff of, like, the big stuff being out there doesn't always have the best artists or the biggest challenge.
Yeah. Also, isn't it, I think in a way it's almost more validating to get someone from your industry who you respect that thinks you're half decent. It's, for me, a way bigger accolade than massive fame and success and everything that comes with that. If I get someone from my industry, it says this guy's quite good. That to me is a much bigger badge of honour than massive commercial success.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it means much more rather than just like thousands of faceless people, doesn't it?
Yeah. What was the circus thing? You said
acro balance. It's where you, like, yeah, it's where you stand on people. It's really fun.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
Have you done, like, so you've been doing that? Have you been trying it?
I had, obviously, now not with quarantine.
Well, yeah, yeah.
It's high contact, not sport, but activity. Oh my God, like, I was, because we were still doing it up till a couple of weeks, well, like a week before quarantine started, and it's kind of like, it's amazing because you do these incredible things with your body, and you're like I would have women standing on me, and you're shaking, and you think you're gonna like fall over, but you just like discover these new strengths you have, and it's you have to be so intensely focused to not drop a person, you know. You have to be really, really, really focused. But it was like, it's also disgusting. Like, you end the classes covered in each other's sweat, and everyone stinks. And so, like, a week before quarantine started, I was like, I have a feeling this is going to be shut down.
Yeah.
And it's,
I don't think that's allowed.
Yeah, and we have a WhatsApp group, and some people are really obsessed with it. Like, some of us are just like, can't wait for AcroBalance class. And people were texting me like, should we get together and do our own little AcroBalance classes? And there was a doctor in the AcroBalance class, and he was like, absolutely not. You're being irresponsible. And like, this was before anyone knew of, like, have to wash your hands and not hug each other or anything. This was when people were still shaking hands. But he was like, he was very angry. I would strongly advise you. Obviously, I cannot control what you do, but I would strongly advise you to take the public health into account. And so AcroBalance is on pause.
So have you seen, oh, sorry.
No, Jim, you go for it.
Have you seen Cheer on Netflix?
No, what's that?
It's a series, docu-series, I guess, about a cheerleading team in Texas. But they do, when you're talking about sort of people on your shoulders and stuff, they're like following people doing a lot of these crazy pyramids and stuff. And there's a lot of that. And then it's like a 6-part series, and there's loads of tension as they're going towards the title and stuff. And some of the characters are incredible. So
is it like real people?
Definitely recommend it.
or fiction?
Yeah, it's real.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Real people.
Oh, interesting. I'd love to see that.
Recommend it. It's because I'm not really into cheerleading, and we started watching. I was like, this is okay. And by the fifth episode, I was like really into it and like really getting nervous when they go to the championship. Oh, they're going to win. Oh,
my
it was
gosh.
Fascinating viewing.
That's so great.
So, are you normally the person at the bottom, or do you? Or is it just, does it, do you swap around?
No, you swap around. So you call it base and flyer. So the base, the people who are, but I tend to have like, there's a girl who's around my height and shape. And so we switch around base and flyer. Obviously, if it's like a big, tall, lanky man, I want to be the flyer there. But we did have, like, you can be, it's a little bit like, you don't want to offend people. You're trying to be politically correct, because like we had there have been a few weeks where there's like three of us, me and a girl and then a big dude, and you don't want to be like, I don't want to base you, so you try. You kind of have to leave it to them. The etiquette is you have to leave it to them to go, I'll base,
yeah,
you know, because it'd be rude to say, I think you are just too heavy to base, you know. So there's social interesting dynamics there. Yeah.
That sounds amazing, though. And was that something you'd like to pursue doing more of, or is it just an outlet?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, well, for now it's just an outlet. Like, it's so much fun. But I did originally, I like acting, but I wanted to be more in movement, in dance. And I auditioned for dance schools, didn't get in. And I actually tried to audition for circus school, but my mom put her foot down. She was just like, no, I've let you do so many crazy things, but I am putting my foot down as your mother. You're not doing this. And, you know, I kind of didn't think I would have got into the school anyway. So I was like, fair enough, I'll just leave it. But now in recent times, I've come back to it, and it's so much fun, because it's all about movement and understanding your body. But it's kind of not as image focused as the dance scene. It's not as making perfect shapes. Like, everyone's at different levels. And because it's really, really hard, everyone is really trying to help each other. They kind of sympathize with how hard it can be. So, I mean, I'd love to do some sort of performance, but I'm not thinking about that right now. I'm just happy where I'm at.
Yeah.
It's great.
I like the idea of everyone supporting each other as well. I think that's nice.
Yeah.
You need that support from people to succeed. I'm wary. I've only got 8% left on my phone, so I'm worried I might drop out at any moment because I'm hotspotting off my phone. Shall we ask the final question?
I think we should
ask all our guests. So we normally ask our guests for their advice on blank moments for our listeners, and we know that we have listeners from all walks of life doing creative and non-creative stuff, but what would your advice be to anyone sort of going through blank moments in their life, be that creative or personal or whichever sort of way you want to interpret it? We tried to leave it open to interpretation.
Oh, that's the point of the question.
Isn't very helpful, is it? Yeah.
Okay.
And lots of people interpret it differently. It can literally be, you know, going blank on stage, or people struggling to write, or it can be periods in people's lives where things aren't happening that
totally,
they want, or,
right.
you know,
yeah.
whatever.
So that's
really.
What I would interpret it. I would interpret it as periods in your life where nothing really exciting is happening and you're feeling like, what am I doing wrong? Because I think there is such an emphasis, as we were talking about, on productivity and being out there and showing up. And so I have a shaman teacher, and she talks about how we need to honor the seasons more, the seasons of creativity. We shouldn't always be in summer. We literally can't always be out there being like, here's what I did, I'm so, isn't this fabulous, look what I made. Like, sometimes you have to, she's like, you have to go like winter, where you have to kind of just rest and hibernate and shed, and then spring is where you're starting to plant the seeds, and you know, you've nothing to show yet, but you're working hard behind the scenes. And and then summer is like the big exciting time that everyone thinks about, but all of those seasons are equally valid and they're equally fulfilling, and you should honor them. You shouldn't put pressure on yourself to not have any blank periods. There's supposed to be moments in your life where just you feel lost and nothing's happening, and it's a struggle. And I think we forget that, because obviously the stuff we see in the media is always people showing the results, like always showing, I suppose, their summer. But like, I don't really want to talk about this too much because it's a bit too raw, but like I'm working on a book at the moment, I'm writing, and like yesterday I just had quite a setback where my editor was like, I'm way too busy with other projects at the moment because it took me so long to get her writing, and she's like, I actually can't really work with you at the moment. And that was like, I think I'd been so much being like, gotta get this, gotta, you know, I have to produce this. You know, for me, it's like, now I have to step back and be like, okay, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not a sudden guaranteed thing. And you just have to honor the fact that I'm still in spring with this project.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And just that's life. I think just a respect for nature, for the cycles of life. And I mean, even like observing nature really helps me in those moments, being like that, like looking at trees and looking at just how animals are. It makes me be like, oh yeah, we're not, our life isn't supposed to be a beautiful array of dazzling just creations. It's, yeah, there's stuff, some, a lot of time where we have to do the inner work. And so, yeah, in those periods, like, they can be hard. I find them really hard, and I like being out there and connecting with people. But I think it's all building you, and it's all part of you. And I think in those times, you should just take it easy. Go easy on yourself and like, maybe just take some time out to do a hobby, to learn something. And you never know that where that will go. Yeah, I don't know if I've answered that well enough.
No, that I think, do you know?
That's, oh, I liked the season. Oh, it's beautiful. That's such a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Well, it's also it's mirrored in so many parts of nature. Like, maybe this is TMI, but I feel like you guys would be up for it.
Yeah.
Like, the menstrual cycle is also, that can be compared to seasons.
Yeah.
And my teacher, I have a teacher for everything. I have like a menstrual teacher, because you're gonna think I'm a total like loon. But she talks about how like it's a relic of the patriarchal society that says that we should always be blooming, like we, you know. Whereas there's cycles of the woman's cycle where, yeah, again, there's winter where you're supposed to be quiet and shed, and you're not supposed to be out there being a social butterfly and doing lots of things. You're supposed to just honor. It's time to shed and rest. And like she talks about how we should, and I haven't mastered this because life is very hard to organize, but she thinks we should be honoring those, like we should be living our life in accordance with those. And she says really the patriarchal society has put this unnatural focus, and because, you know, that masculine energy is more testosterone fueled, whatever, but we should be respecting that. I don't know if I'm explaining this very well, but again, there's a cycle to everything, and we should live our life in accordance with those patterns and not put pressure on ourselves to always be one thing, one season. Yeah.
That's true. That's so true. Yeah, that's true. It's respecting the process, respecting nature, and respecting how things go, and not trying to force it too much. I think that's, I can really relate to that.
That's good.
Ivana, it has been an absolute privilege to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time.
It's been really fun. Thanks for inviting me on.
No, it's so nice.
Oh, it's been great having you on.
Yeah, and it's so nice to finally chat to you properly.
Yeah, likewise. You're the nicest person on Twitter, Giles. I don't know if you know that, but like, I just see you always being so friendly and so nice. And even reading your book yesterday, I was like, I kind of get it. Like, people who've had to deal with real grief, I think they're changed by that. They're much more, they're kind of broken open. So, but like, yeah, you're just so kind and lovely and supportive. And I love that. I just don't think enough people are that. I think people are so cagey and so afraid of how they come across. And yeah, anyway, thanks for being so kind.
Oh, well, no, that's, well, I'm getting a bit emotional, actually. Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. No, honestly, that's genuinely really, really means a lot.
Cool. And you're brilliant. Great too,
great
Jim.
To meet you.
Sorry, I just haven't talked to you as much. Oh, right. You're lovely too.
I'll take it, that's fine. I'll take that. No, it's been really nice meeting you talking to you today. Yeah. It's been lovely.
Great.
Well, there you go. That was Ivana Lynch on the Blank Podcast. What a great conversation
it was,
that
indeed.
Was.
Yeah, really nice. One of those ones that went to a lot of different places. You know, she opened up about difficult periods in her life, but then she was also telling us about current stuff and future thoughts and fears, and kind of went everywhere, really. And it's just, we're so lucky that these people come on and talk so openly, and but they're also so friendly at the same time. I feel like we get a very specific, nice guest on, and Ivana was another one.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's so nice because we chatted for about 20 minutes afterwards as well, and you know, and quite a long time before we started recording. So, you know, it was just really nice for her to give us all that time, and yeah, just to be able to chat and talk, you know, shoot the shit a little bit as well, which was just great, you know, just to see how we're all doing and reflect on that thing. You know, obviously she's really successful at what she does, and it was nice also to hear her talking about, you know, taking stock a little bit about, you know, with her own work, and this time has been a time for her to reflect on what she's doing and, you know, what kind of projects she wants to pursue in the future. And I thought that was really interesting.
Agreed, yeah. And it is nice to check in with each other, and that's what these pods are doing in a way. We are sort of checking in with people, and I think that's really important in this kind of sort of lockdown world. So yeah, when those people also happen to be really nice and successful and friendly people, then that's an added bonus. So yeah, thank you very much, Ivana, for joining us. And as I say, I have written down astrology Instagram live, so I'm going to try and check out some of that and see if I can learn a bit more about
what was
it.
The phrase Venus.
Venus Retrograde.
Which I do think is a good name for a band, as usually.
It's like a stargazing band. It's like an indie stargazing band, isn't it? Shoegazers. Shoegazers.
Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, you can at the usual places, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can do that
at blank pod.
And you can also email us. That old technology.
That old fashioned way of contacting. Email. Remember emails? Our email address is theblankpodcast2018@gmail.com.
It certainly is. You see, you nail it every time now, Jim. It's ingrained.
I'm getting good at that
now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
we need to get lunch. It's lunchtime.
It is lunchtime. Thanks for listening. We hope you're all keeping safe and well. And we'll be back next week with another episode of The Blank Podcast. So take care, and we'll see you again soon. right, let me stop that. Oh no, I forgot about the music.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is a Blast Box Media Podcast.